Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me tonight is the rest of the Let's Weekenders, Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi, and Dan Rib Victorio.
Hello.
Yo.
Yay.
Yep, Dan Rib's with us again after a while.
Yeah.
So it is, this episode is for September 23rd, 2016. Summer is finally over. Thank you, God.
Yeah.
Crawled back into the hellfires from whence it came.
Yeah.
Not to come back again for at least another
3 months.
Yeah.
So we got some stuff we'll be talking about today. We'll be talking about Loveline, which has finally made its reappearance.
Or has it?
We've also got some stuff about Adult Swim, some hockey news, and of course some stuff about various individuals from Verge and Oculus.
Hmm. Yeah.
And of course we'll have our usual stuff, and I of course will hopefully not pass out in the middle of this episode, because I'm a little on the sleepy side, but
yeah, we'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes.
Pass out during this show, well, the show will just end abruptly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a little 2.5 hour nap in before the podcast, so I'm good.
Yeah. All right, and well, start us off. Bill, what have you been up to this week?
Well, I decided I wanted to read Ready Player One again, so I did. Yeah, that book is kind of interesting. I'm not sure. It's weird because he, you remember where Wade was describing his like DeLorean that he has in the game?
Yeah,
yeah. You know, we turns out Ernest Cline actually has that car.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure if he got it in direct response to that, or I don't know what he did, but hey, it's cool.
I don't know, but he got it.
Yeah.
And those of you don't know, Spielberg is working on a Ready Player One film adaptation.
Yeah, and we're all very, 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 very afraid.
Yeah.
Especially since he is not putting references to his own movies in there.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a shit idea, because a good chunk of Ready Player One is movie references. So,
yeah. Well, there's not going to be references to E.T. or to Raiders or anything like that. And so that's going to be a problem, I think.
Yeah. Also, it seems... What was that?
When's the movie coming out?
I think it's the end of this year.
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay. No, because I actually got the book in my first loot crate a year ago, and I haven't read it yet.
Jeez.
So
it's time.
It's not a very long book.
No, no, it's just not.
It moves very fast, too.
Yeah, it does.
The thing that has a lot of people sort of anxious is the fact that a lot of the imagery we're getting from, you know, Twitter and Tumblr seems to be focusing more on the city part more than the stuff going on in the Oasis, which is worrying.
Yeah, because in the book, you don't see very much of the real world. Yeah.
Yeah, the current release date is March 30th, 2018.
Oh, okay, so it has time to change.
A couple years.
Oh, okay.
Got some time.
I thought it was supposed to be this year, but I guess they pushed it back. Maybe that's for
a lost.
Yeah. So I've been reading that, and once I finished that, I started on Armada again. I'm going to give it another shot. The first time through, I thought it was kind of was okay, but something just didn't quite sit well with me. So maybe
it reminds me way too much of Ender's Game, to be honest.
Yeah,
that and The Last Starfighter.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it's all right. I just wonder how I'm gonna feel like right at around the halfway point of the book, where, well, you've read it, right?
Yep.
Okay, we'll go spoilers. You remember the whole automated gate on the in the base.
Yeah.
Which just that just didn't sit well with me, because why would you build a gate with a sensory with a proximity sensor that will ignore, well, that will let your own drone in even when it's being chased by, you know, an enemy drone?
Exactly.
And, you know, they're both unmanned. Who cares if they blow up? But yeah, so yeah, that bothered me, but whatever. We'll see how I feel when I get to that one. And finally this week, I appeared on the Moose Tracks podcast, which was fun. I did my little review of the Audio-Technica LP60 turntable and chatted a bit with Mark. It was a fun little podcast. Yeah, link is there in the show notes if you want to go over and check it out. Mark's a great guy, and you should definitely check it out.
Alright.
And that was pretty much my week, other than playing a bunch of Zenith, but I'll talk about that on day zero.
Yeah. Alright, and then Pat, what about you?
Yeah, started watching ReZero.
Oh, that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And by fun, I mean it's going to completely fuck your mind.
Good. I need that kind of anime experience. I haven't had one in quite a while.
Yeah, that anime, I'm just going to tell you, at first you think it's going to be like one of those parallel world fantasy anime. No, it that's there, but you find out later on it's mostly more of like a psychological thriller.
Yeah, I've already gotten to that point. I'm about 5 episodes in, and there are some things that strike me as very intriguing about it. We'll put it that way. So for those who don't know the overall premise, it basically there's this guy, Subaru, who just he's out shopping one day and walks out of the store and emerges into a completely different world.
Yeah.
Which is very RPG inspired.
And the great thing is he's trope aware.
He's not just trope aware. He straight up admits to being a hikikomori and more or less gives no fucks about the fact that he just left the entire world that he was born in behind. And that in itself is interesting, because he's got this attitude of, you know what, okay, bring it on. I'm cool with this. And
it doesn't end well. But that's part of the...
Yeah, I will say that his first encounter with Elsa is about what I actually picture when I see a Tonberry stroke in a Final Fantasy game.
Yep.
And Rhyme and Rem are not quite what I expected. Yeah, but in an awesome way, just like how they're constantly talking shit. So, I'm 5 or 6 episodes in, depending on how you want to count it, because the first episode is a two-parter that are both listed as episode 1.
Yeah. So, I'm guessing you're watching this on Crunchyroll?
Yeah.
All right.
And apparently the season just wrapped up, but there's a second one coming, or there's a huge push for a second one.
Yeah.
So,
of course, if you really wanted to, you could always read the books, since, you know, a couple of them here in English already.
Yeah, I would have to find it in audio form in order for that to work.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons, but I'm as popular as it seems to be, I wouldn't be surprised if that was coming too.
Yeah.
In addition to that, I'm about to start Ao Haru Ride, because don't judge me.
Yeah.
But I've heard that it's really good, and it's, you know, it's been on my list for a while.
Right.
So I'm finally getting around to checking that out. And that's about it for me this week.
Awesome. All right. Chris, what about you?
So I watched Zootopia.
Yes.
I got a nice little Google discount to get the rental 75% off.
Yep.
So it was nice and cheap, and that was actually really good.
Yeah, I told you it would be.
And for a kids movie, the world is very complex.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of the whole hierarchy stuff and just the whole idea of the world is designed for the big predators, the smaller prey, and the tiny rodents.
Yeah. It's really the world building is one of the things that sells that movie.
It's just really impressive in just scope and complexity.
Mm-hmm. It's just it's not just that it looks good, but it all makes sense.
Yeah. Definitely feels like a world that's been lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely one of my favorite parts, just the whole DMV sequence.
Yeah, that's pretty much everyone.
It's like, oh, what's the way to make the DMV worse? By filling them with sloths.
Yep.
Then just having an asshole with Hops, who just wants to make it even worse.
Yeah.
And so that was a lot of fun to watch. And alongside it, I watched Sword in the Stone.
Now that's one I actually haven't seen in a while.
Yeah. So of all the Disney animated stuff that I watched as a kid, that and Robin Hood stand out as the two best that I just love watching.
Yeah, did you notice also that both of those movies actually have, like, recycled animation in them?
Yeah, they're just very, very rough animated movies. See the sketches in the animation.
Yeah, it was, from what I've read, those movies, I think, came out in, I think it was the, like, late 60s.
Probably some of the early stuff.
Late 60s, early 70s. Which was during a time when Disney, it was right after Walt Disney himself had died, and they were kind of in a limbo period.
Yeah.
Where they were still trying to put out these movies, but, you know, because Walt wasn't producing them anymore, it had basically moved on to, you know, to the Disney estate, and, you know, they were still having to deal with their shareholders and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, they hadn't quite hit rock bottom yet. They, you know, that wouldn't happen until early to mid 80s. But yeah, it was a weird time.
Yeah, it was released on December 25th, 1963.
That's what I thought.
Yes. If anybody wants to see what Brandon means about recycled animation, look up the honest trailer for the Jungle Book movie.
Yeah.
it's hilarious.
That scene, like, literally the cells, like, okay, if you ever saw Sword in the Stone and you saw the Jungle Book and you've seen that scene where Mowgli gets thrown back and he gets, like, all things licking his face and he has to wipe off his face, that is... They use the exact same
thing in the Robin Hood.
Exact same cells. they just traced over them.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts of that movie is Arthur's yelling clip that he does whenever he's like about to fall over or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Just real loud noise that you hear constantly through the whole movie. As just a sort of a bumbling fool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just something I really like watching every once in a while. It's a thing that I have, thanks to Disney's sort of revamped digital cloud stuff, that was also in the YouTube player, since their Disney Movie Anywhere feature thing sort of syncs with the Google accounts as well. So that made it pretty easy to just say, okay, I watched Zootopia and just watched Sword in the Stone.
Mm.
And so I guess that was the last animated movie Disney released before Walt's death.
Yeah, I think it was.
That's what it said on the wiki.
Yeah, the last actual Disney movie that Walt himself worked on was actually Mary Poppins.
Yeah. Yeah, which the Sherman Brothers, who wrote the music for that movie, also did Mary Poppins.
Mm-hmm.
And Jungle Book, Aristocrats, Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Yep.
So yeah, that was also a lot of fun to watch. I'm also still playing Picross 3D Round 2. I am on the last book. Over 350 freaking puzzles in that game.
Or are you?
Nah, that's the very last one. And yeah, still going with that stuff, and still enjoying the hell out of it. I just want to get it done so I can go back to Super Mario 3D Land. So I can beat that.
That's a good game.
Yep. And, game. Yeah, that's been pretty much it for me this week.
All right. What about you, Dan Reb?
A lot of stuff, actually. It's been a while since I've been on a last weekend, this weekend, mainly because last of weekend. Last weekend. There we go.
What show am I on again?
Yeah.
You got to make more of these, man.
I just got back from Disneyland last weekend, and it was fun. The last time I went there was last year, but I went there for a friend's birthday party, and she got engaged the next day. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool for her. Short gaming-wise, I think I'm done with Trails of Cold Steel 2. Mm-hmm. There's like three separate endings you play in one playthrough, so yeah, it's pretty fun for those of you that get there. Mm-hmm. And now that summer is over, it's time to get back into TV. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Blindspot already premiered their latest seasons. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is it's all right. They're incorporating Ghost Rider into the show now, so that should probably bring some viewers back. But to me, it's still kind of boring and on the lower end of all the superhero stuff they have on TV now. Blindspot's back on NBC. That show is still good, and I've also been catching up on some Girl Meets World on Disney Channel, because that's some good family programming. I also plan on starting Mr. Robot, because a lot of my friends told me to start that, but yeah.
Yes.
I say plan on, because, yeah, whenever I say I plan on doing something, I don't really ever get to it. I mean, a few months ago I said I planned on beating Shenmue, which didn't happen, so yeah, eventually I will. I also plan on finishing Parks and Rec sometime soon. Like, last year I binge-watched the first few seasons, and then for some reason or another I just stopped. I don't know why. But then my friends say I have to be really patient, because once it's over, it's over. And yeah, it's also some good comedy. I also have a 10K race tomorrow morning and Sunday morning. So yeah, I will not be appearing on the Day Zero update, so... Yeah, that's why I talked.
You will be in bed, covered in ice.
Oh yeah, except after those races, I have to go to work.
Nice.
Tomorrow night, and then on Sunday night, I actually have an event to do in San Francisco, which is about a 2-hour commute away from me. So, yeah, absolute hell.
And you just hate yourself.
You know, I always pride myself on trying to hate myself, but not doing so. So that always helps. And then on Monday, I have a job interview, so hoping I land it. It's with a mobile gaming company, so I don't know if that'll jeopardize anything with what I do for Smash Pad, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, shouldn't. I mean, we don't really cover mobile, so.
Exactly. It's finally a way to get my foot into the industry, and I hope it works out, because this is a company I really want to work for, and it seems like it's a good fit. So, I have all that going on, and... All right, Brandon, what are you doing?
All right, well, first and foremost, I've been playing... Well, first and foremost, I have put Tales of Exilia 2 to the side for a little while. And so I am now playing Drakengard 3. I don't know if any of you guys have ever played Drakengard 3.
Mm-hmm. I know there's dragons.
Yeah, it is.
We're a non-RPG. So.
Fucked up. Remember, this is the same series that not only gave us the first Drakengard, it also gave us Nier.
Hmm.
Yep.
And speaking of which, I'm planning on going and getting a copy of Nier for my PS3 because Nier Automata is coming out, you know, in a few months, and I want to get back into that game because I never quite finished it. Because the thing about
it a few times just to get all of it.
Yeah, and the thing about Nier is about as close a JRPG gets to something like Spec Ops: The Line.
Yeah.
In that it makes you really hate yourself. It's one of those games that really does make you give you that "my God, what have I done" feeling.
Yeah.
And of course, Dragon Guard 3 takes place in that same overall universe. Couple of differences. There is still some really messed up shit going on. But the thing is that the character you play as is so joyfully psychotic that you don't really care all that much. Basically, you are playing... Well, I don't want to give away too much without, you know, talking about it on the Day Zero update, but basically, you are playing a group of goddesses that one of the... Well, you're playing one of the of a group of goddesses that are called the Intoners, who in this particular game were given... They're actually... The story of Drakengard is partly related to one of the endings that you get in the first Drakengard, a sort of a branch off of that. And specifically, it's about how, you know, these groups of goddesses who have this incredible power of song, where like their voices can, you know, do all kinds of weird magic shit, are called Intoners, and they basically bring balance to the world. There's five of them, and then there's Zero, who is apparently the eldest of them all. And one day she just straight up decides, you know what, fuck those bitches, I'm going to kill them all. So... That's who you're playing as.
Okay.
And what's especially funny is that the narrator in this game is basically sort of giving you sort of the history up to the point of the game starting, you know, like who the Intoners were, what the world was like before they came in, what they did. And then Zero shows up and kills him about halfway through. Like in mid-sentence.
Okay, that's narrator death. I think that's a new one for me.
Yeah. Then, you know, as she's going on, I've already managed to kill the first Intoner, whose name was, she was the fifth one, apparently the youngest of the group. Known for being extremely greedy and apparently being a bit of a nympho.
Hmm.
And once you finally kill her, which, by the way, The apparent death scene is apparently so grisly that the game cuts away to a sort of like a...
Censored.
Well, sort of one of those "we are experiencing technical difficulty" pictures, as you can hear all the blood and shrieking in the background. I mean, she's just... Literally, it's something akin to just going, "Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you!" And then... There's her consort, this guy named Mito, who... One of the other things about this game is that all the goddesses have a consort, and as you go through and kill all the goddesses, the consorts join up with you. Mito is her consort, and is a Five's consort, and once she's dead... Well, she's almost dead, but the thing is about goddesses is that they're apparently immortal, and if you... kill one, they all have like a flower or something on their person, and if you kill them, their clone or whatever will grow out of the flower. And Five is midway through that until Mito comes up and basically splits her in half. Like stabs her right in the back and just right up the middle.
Pleasant.
And then he comes up and he's basically just stomping on her corpse. And once again, it's apparently so foul that the audio switches over to this sort of middle-of-the-road elevator music. That's the thing. I know that sounds funny, but considering that this is in Drakengard, it's completely possible that those gags are hiding is actually pretty messed up and will probably turn up later on in the game. So
nice.
That's Draken Guard 3. I've also been reading Ron Chernow's biography of Alexander Hamilton, the book that inspired Lin-Manuel Miranda's musical. Actually, it's really good. Definitely worth reading. It's long, I'm not going to lie. It's like a good 800 pages, but it's, you know, Chernow is at least a good enough writer that you don't really care. And
we got a documentary coming up out about the musical soonish.
Yeah, and the thing about the book, it helps sort of clear up some of the dramatic liberties that Miranda took, which, for the record, he didn't really alter any essential facts. What he did was he sort of compressed the timeline a little bit. So, like, you know, in the musical, when it starts off, you know, Hamilton's just getting off the boat, and he immediately meets Aaron Burr, and then they walk into a tavern, and John Lawrence, Hercules Mulligan, and the Marquis de Lafayette are all there. In reality, what happened is that Hamilton had actually been living in the country for about a couple of years. Specifically, he had been living specifically with Hercules Mulligan, who he had originally met when he was still living in the Caribbean. And he actually didn't meet Lawrence and Lafayette until after he'd already joined up with the Continental Army. So, yeah. But Burr was actually the second person in that group that he didn't meet. So that part is true. That's about as far as I've gotten. The book goes a lot into sort of his childhood and the stuff that the first song in the musical kind of skims over.
Yeah.
But it's actually, you know, it's really good. And turns out Thomas Jefferson really was a giant asshole. I mean, he was brilliant, but he was kind of a dick. James Madison wasn't quite as bad. And John Adams was also an asshole, too. But anyway. So that's pretty much what I've been doing. Like I said last week, I've started walking again now that the weather isn't ball-scorching hot anymore.
Yeah.
So that's good. And the weather's been, you know, fairly compliant, too. So I am awaiting imminent heavy storms.
No, they'll come.
Has the weather out my way been making national news? I'm just curious.
I have been hearing things.
Yeah, we got, like, what can only be described as torrential downpour.
Yeah.
Cache Valley the last couple days. Roommates gave me a ride to work the other night, and we saw a bucket floating down the road next to us.
Well,
and apparently,
like that's like, well, that's supposed to be the other way around.
And down by Ogden, which is about 45 minutes south of me, they got hit by two tornadoes. So, which doesn't necessarily happen that much around here, but yeah, it's been interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well then, has anybody got anything else they want to add?
Not really.
All right then. Well, with that being said, it's time once again for Brandon's Random Factoid. And this time I thought I would do a little bit of a history lesson because, you know, like I said earlier, I have been reading Ron Chernow's book on Alexander Hamilton. And of course, when you're talking about Alexander Hamilton, you have to talk about Aaron Burr, because Aaron Burr was someone who Hamilton knew. He was friends with him, then rivals, and then, as everybody knows, Burr ultimately killed him. As history will show, that Burr wasn't necessarily a bad guy, but he was crippled with this extreme inferiority complex that basically warped everything he did. He was one of those people who thought that unless he had some kind of power, he was basically worthless as a human being. Which might explain the reason why, after Hamilton's death, he then went over to the western part of the colonies of the U.S. and tried to take them over and maybe become king of them. Yeah.
Yeah, sounds like a great guy.
So, Aaron Burr, this is a thing that was called the Burr Conspiracy, and basically it goes like this. After 1804, which is when the fatal duel with Hamilton happened, Aaron Burr was still more or less in general disrepute at that point. He was still technically the vice president at the time, though he would be the last individual who would become vice president the way he did, because in Burr's time, whoever it was that, you know, what came second in the election was the person that would become the vice president. That's actually how Thomas Jefferson became vice president before he became president. He was John Adams' vice president. But
imagine that system today.
Yeah.
Fortunately, that system we don't have today. Cause,
yeah.
Can you imagine Donald Trump as our vice president?
Yeah, it was also when you had multiple candidates, like viable candidates, not like today where it's just two and then...
Yeah. But anyway, so for whatever reason, Aaron Burr, you know, he decided he wanted to undertake another scheme to get power. So, and it should be pointed out that his exact intentions aren't really clear. A lot of what we know is from court papers and from hearsay, but it basically goes like this. Basically, he was involved in an effort to capture a few of the Spanish possessions in the Southwest, possibly even to engineer the secession of Western states from the Union, or both, really. But either way, what happened is he began conspiring with these two individuals. One was a gentleman named James Wilkinson, who was then governor of the Louisiana Territory. Remember, this was right around after the Louisiana Purchase, which was one of Jefferson's things that he's known for. Wilkinson was also known for being kind of shady as a person. He was known for doing lots of backroom, underhanded deals. Something even Burr wasn't as bad as. The other person he ended up getting involved with was this gentleman by the name of Harmon Bienzoff. It's Harmon Blennerhassett. That's right, Harmon Blennerhassett, who was a Irish immigrant who lived in a mansion on an island in the Ohio River. Actually near West Virginia, specifically Parkersburg. So in 1806, what we do know from here is this. Blennerhassett decided to provide funding for the outfitting of a small fleet of flatboats. Burr had his own personal boat among them, which was, you know, accommodated with all the appropriate accommodations a man of his stature did, including just a god-awful amount of booze. Nice. They then cruised down the Ohio River, headed for the Mississippi, and eventually were going to get to New Orleans. For reasons that are unknown, James Wilkinson reported Burr's actions to Thomas Jefferson, who, of course, was president at the time. Jefferson, in turn, ordered Burr's arrest. Burr was then arrested. He was taken to Richmond, Virginia, and then was put on trial for charges of treason. So you're probably wondering, so does this mean that Burr went to jail and got or was executed? Well, no, because what happened is that the judge that ended up presiding over his trial was none other than Chief Justice John Marshall, who was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at the time. John Marshall is one of the most famous of the Supreme Court's Chief Justices for a myriad of reasons, one of them being that he hated Thomas Jefferson's guts.
Okay.
So, He insisted upon the narrowest possible interpretation of treason for Burr, which required an overt act to prove treason and not just conspiracy. As you can probably manage, it basically doomed the case from the beginning. Burr was let go, walked scot-free. Eventually, he immigrated over to Britain, took up his law practice again, and basically stayed there until his death. Funny enough, also, side note, Chief Justice Marshall actually subpoenaed President Jefferson himself to testify before the court. Jefferson refused to do so, citing the independent nature of the branches of the government. This inevitably ended up setting precedent. So now you know why almost no president has ever been subpoenaed to go before the court, because of these two separate branches of our system.
And 200 years later, very little has changed.
Nope. Yeah. That's right. Aaron Burr, believed to have wanted to get the Western states to secede and maybe become the head of his own country. Because the dude, let's just face it, he was just fucked in the head. And that has been, once again, yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. This edition of Brandon's Random Factoid is once again being sponsored by Harambe. Harambe, fuck you, I'm still glad he's dead.
Ow.
Damn.
Internet okay. Memes made me apathetic about that'll Harambe. Get us
in- Yep. All right, so with that out of the way, it's time to go on to our next weekly installments of the Asshole of the Week. And we actually had two candidates this time. It was a tie. Because, they're both equally asshole-ish. Yeah.
I think I have to give the edge to one because the other one was just kind of them doing what they do.
Yeah, but we'll get to that. So, first and foremost, and probably the one that kind of has the minor edge over the other one, the Washington Post were awarded a Pulitzer for an expose that they put out that was sourced by none other than famous exiled whistleblower Edward Snowden. Then immediately called for his prosecution.
Okay.
They accepted a Pulitzer Prize and then called for the prosecution of the source of the piece that got them the Pulitzer.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Because American journalism is two-faced and fucked.
Hmm. Yeah. I think the Washington Post is owned by Jeff Bezos, by the way, so make that of it what you will.
You will.
Yep. Yeah, so this is sort of that have your cake and eat it too bullshit that I really cannot stand about just the media in general. How it can just sort of talk out of one side of its mouth and then talk and then do the complete opposite through the other side.
Like trying to condemn Trump but not call him out on all of his bullshit.
Yeah. Or
he's just stretching the truth.
Or call him out on his bullshit and then endorse him.
Yeah.
Oops.
This is why the media in the U.S. is dead.
Well,
I mean, it's a lie.
Correctly. There were three other news outlets that produced stories from the same stuff that Snowden provided, and they all called for his pardon.
Yeah. Washington Post, on the other hand.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems a little bit on the strange side to me to just decide that, well, the source of your information is someone you should probably prosecute now that you've.
Yeah, that's a very bad precedent in journalism. Yeah,
you know, you've gotten what you wanted out of them. Now, just discard them. Yeah,
yeah.
No longer useful. And,
yeah.
But that is just a special level of douchebaggery there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But on the other hand, we've also got another, our other candidate, the one that doesn't have the slight edge. But and what has something that hasn't really happened all that much in the last couple of decades? The Ku Klux Klan has started leaving flyers out all over the country, not just in one little town, but all over the country.
Yeah.
And the reason I put this on here is because, as I've said before, you can be the biggest asshole in the world, but a Klansman or a Nazi will outdo you every yes. time. You know, there's nothing like, you know, there's political corruption, and then there's being an organization dedicated to the extermination of an entire race of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the Klan, basically.
Yeah. So they've been, you know, handing out their propaganda flyers all over the place now.
Yep.
Wow.
And you know who to thank. We all do.
Yep. It's not the disease, it's a symptom.
Yeah.
Yep. So,
really can't wait until the end of this election cycle.
You and me both, brother.
I don't think it's going to end with that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Just I said on Facebook the other day, just somebody hit me in the head with a sledgehammer because I don't want to wake up until after November.
Yeah.
All I know is that once this election is over, it's going to be really interesting at Thanksgiving this year.
Oh, yeah. For those who don't know, Brandon is not a Republican, but his family is.
Yeah.
This is not going to go well. This environment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much my whole family are Republicans. In fact, my mom and dad put a Trump-Pence sign out front of their house this week. So.
That answered my next question.
Yeah.
They got it from my grandmother. Who in turn got hers from her neighbor, who is also my uncle.
Oh, this is going to be real fun.
Oh, yeah. All I know, though, is that Let's Weekend is going to be quite interesting that week.
Yes.
So for those of you who don't know, just for the record, the election is going to be on November 8th this year. That's going to be on a Tuesday. Let's Weekend is going to be on the 11th, or at least we're going to be recording it on the 9th of the 11th. Yeah.
Mark your calendars, folks.
Oh, and by the way, just so anybody knows, the first debate is going to be Monday. This Monday, coming up.
Yeah, watch out for that.
Yeah. That is going to be entertaining to watch. To get that taste out of our mouths, let's move on to the hero of the week, which is none other than Coach Steve Kerr.
Yep.
Of the who's he coach of?
Golden State Warriors.
State Warriors.
The Warriors, right. And basically this is what he had to. Well, you know, who was it that put this down? They can explain it better.
I was the one who put it down, but the short version is basically that Steve Kerr is more or less endorsing the sort of silent protest going on in the NFL right now.
Yeah.
And basically rightly pointing out that all Americans should be disgusted and outraged by everything that's been going on in this country lately with, just excessive force against minorities. And
Steve Kerr is white, by the way. We kind of need to point that out.
And that's important because that is something that's kind of been getting lost in the shuffle of all this. It seems like it's only been athletes of color just advocating for their own, when really this is this is something that everybody needs to take up.
Right.
If we're going to see, if we're going to see any kind of real change. So, yeah, obviously there's been getting some pushback from, the sports world as a whole, but you kind of expect that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think we've reached a point now where this is getting some real momentum. It's getting some real attention, and you know, hopefully we see some actual progress out of it, because the situation as it is now is just something that cannot continue. It cannot be allowed to continue.
Oh,
so
yeah, it seems like the cat is out of the bag.
Yeah,
they can't put it back in.
All right.
As much great. As people like Mike Ditka would like it to.
Yeah, and The Onion did a great job of, as they always do, of shining a spotlight on the real sentiments of their detractors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, oh, hold on, I posted it earlier, said, well, the headline, it was a spoof op-ed piece that said, I just wish NFL players could find a way to protest without starting a national dialogue. And that's pretty much how the entire article goes. It's good.
Yeah, and the next issue of Time Magazine is actually going to feature Colin Kaepernick.
Yep.
And all that
on the
stuff.
Cover. Yep. Awesome. All right. So, moving on from there, we've got a new PSN flash sale we need to talk about. Normally, we'd be doing this on the Day Zero update, but because this one is all going to be almost over by the time we record that, we're going ahead and talking about it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is a animation-themed sale, so it's a lot of anime and Disney yeah. stuff. So a
yep,
lot of
I've
your
rated it.
Namco stuff that is pretty good stuff.
Yeah, I'll point out Kiba's Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force.
Yes.
For
Double Fine has a bunch of stuff on here.
Remake
Broken
of
Age.
A very good PS3 RPG.
Yeah, Broken Age, Grim Fandango, Day of the Tentacle, all pretty cheap.
Yeah.
I feel the need to specifically point out Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force and Omega Quintet, which are a pair of games that were made by Galapagos RPG, which is an offshoot of Compile Heart.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Along with Nipponichi.
Yeah. Don't forget Mega Dimension Neptunia 7
yep.
is on there.
On the subject of Nipponichi. but yeah. Very good RPGs. I know at least Fairy Fencer F was penned by Toshiki Inoue, who most of his work in the past has been in tokusatsu. And he's a very formulaic writer, I have to admit, but also very compelling. It just, if you have watched some of his tokusatsu series, you kind of know what you're getting into when certain things happen in Fairy Fencer F.
Mm.
But, you know, don't let that give you any pause, because it is a very good game and I highly recommend it.
Hmm.
Yeah. And Ni no Kuni is on here.
Oh yeah.
Obviously a very good game.
Yeah.
And also Senran Kagura Bon Appetit, which is a cooking game, like a QTE sort of rhythm based cooking game.
Hmm.
Where usually the girls end up scantily clad by the end of it. Which is, like, really stupid.
But if there is one common thread connecting the entire Senran Kagura franchise, that is it.
Yeah.
Speaking of girls, Catherine is $5. That's a fantastic
game. If anyone hasn't experienced that game yet, they need to.
Yeah, see what the Persona team was working on while they're waiting for Persona 5.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, they were learning the 7th generation hardware, which, in hindsight, is kind of sad because... They didn't really end up doing much with 7th gen.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the whole bar scene is basically in Persona.
Yeah.
They have like a little gathering place that looks like that area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
Catherine taught me about a few cocktails that I never tried before, and they're all delicious. So.
Yeah.
I learned about pizza.
I learned about what it's like to constantly dream about stacking blocks on top of blocks and climbing on them.
About endless nightmares.
No. That game has the same effect on you that, you know, Tetris does.
Okay. So there's some Tales games in this sale.
I was just going to say, play Catherine and learn how to drink better.
Yeah.
What's, Brandon, do you have anything to say about Tales of Zestiria?
Zestiria is, yeah, definitely give that one a try.
Worth the cash here? Let's see how much it is. Is it worth the cash here?
How much is it?
Where did it go?
$20 for PS4, $17 for PS3.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I mean, that's about as much as I got it when I got it from GameStop, so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's definitely worth it.
If you're up for being bummed out, Valiant Hearts is on sale, as well as This War of Mine.
Oh, yeah.
Get a couple games that will depress you.
Yeah.
Tell you about some really depressing content.
Well, I've rated it.
Yeah. By the way, those who don't know, the next Tales game, Tales of Berseria, is, I believe, coming out next... early next year? No, it's coming out this... it's coming out this... never mind. It's coming out in the U.S. going to be first quarter 2017, so yeah.
Probably February.
Oh. Yeah.
Is it just a thing that they try and rhyme all of their titles?
Yeah.
Vesperia.
No, it's kind of a recent thing, because the first Tales game was Tales of the Abyss.
Yeah.
But
seems like a lot of these recent ones are all.
I thought it was Fantasia.
Yeah. Tales of Fantasia, Tales of Vesperia, all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Child of Light. You guys are just changing one letter each title.
Yeah.
Child of Light. Yeah. Ultimate Edition.
Yeah.
Wasn't a fan of that.
Yeah. Didn't like the rhyming personally.
I like the battle system.
Yeah, I do too.
So, yeah, good stuff there.
Arcubus Trips on there. Highly recommend that for anyone who...
Another game about taking people's clothes off.
Yeah. A solid beat-em-up RPG in its own right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm reading that Snowy Fencer game is about a guy who just wants to eat meat. So, you know, it's those games that, you know, they're not grade A, but at the same time, we need these big games to just chill to. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
They're palate cleansers for the Legend of Heroes type stuff.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, I'm done. I got Guilty Gear XRD Revelator and Nitro Plus Blasters, so I'm happy.
Yeah. All right. All right, so moving on from there, we're going to the real meat of the show then. So first and foremost, the editor of Verge, one of the editors at Verge.
Chris Siegler.
Chris Siegler recently took a job at Apple, which wouldn't be a problem, except he didn't tell any of his coworkers.
He just disappeared. He just fucking bounced. Like, wait, what happened to this guy? We're really worried about him, and find out, oh, he's been working at Apple. Fuck him.
How do you forget to tell your coworkers that you're taking a job?
I don't think he forgot. He just said, peace, I'm out.
He just fucked off.
Said, fuck you, I'm at Apple now.
Well, he didn't even say that. He just...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't mind not telling people that, you know, I'm applying for jobs because, you know, you shouldn't. But if you're already taking the job and you've already started, you know, you can at least tell people that.
Yeah.
Especially when it's one that potentially could be compromising.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it could have a little bit of conflict of interest there.
Yeah. But it seems like he didn't actually write anything while he was there. So, but he might have actually lost his Apple job as well.
Oops.
Really?
Like somebody was suggesting that he's not in the Apple employee database anymore.
Uh-oh.
Oh, shit.
I mean, it is publicized now, so.
Eh, Lord.
Yeah, you fucked that up, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the moral of the story.
Really salty about a job to pull something like that.
Yeah. And the moral story is, if you're upfront about it, no harm, no foul.
Yeah. I know that you like hanging out in the white room with Johnny Ive, but, you know, you really need to tell your coworkers that you're leaving.
So it says here down at the bottom, Chris only actively worked at The Verge while employed by Apple in July and was almost entirely absent from our team in August. So we are confident that we've reviewed the situation thoroughly.
Yeah, there wasn't really any Apple stuff going on in July and August, so
yeah,
it was probably fine, but Apple's probably not going to take that chance.
No. Yeah, Palmer Luckey, one of the guys who founded Oculus, was recently discovered that he has been funding a meme posting group called Nimble America, which has allied itself with the Trump campaign.
Oh, dear.
Who the fuck pays for memes?
If you're paying for memes, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they got a billboard.
So, the billboard was the Trump Superman billboard, wasn't it?
No, it's in the article, the big picture. There's a giant deformed head of Hillary says, too big to jail.
Oh. Really? Yeah. You know, this is kind of troubling.
It's also hurting developer support for Oculus already.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Damn it, just...
Lucky insists he's just the group's money man.
That's not an excuse.
No. This is especially worrying because it's kind of a sort of a trend that's been going on in Silicon Valley for the last few years of these tech guys getting exposed as working in these sort of right-wing and far-right-wing groups.
Oh, there's something interesting here.
Oh?
I guess Lucky met the man who would serve as the liaison for the nascent political action group, Breitbart tech editor and Trump booster Milo Yiannopoulos.
Ugh. Of course.
So yeah, this goes pretty deep.
Yep.
Well, Oculus is about to get a firm rogering.
Let's see, I came into touch with them over Facebook. It went along the lines of, hey, I have a bunch of money. I'd love to see more of this stuff. They wanted to build buzz and do fundraising. That's when the trouble began.
You want to see Mark Zuckerberg throw his weight around?
Yes, he's fixing to.
That's going to happen.
Very soon.
He's going to have to save Oculus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so the company statement is, we conquered Reddit and drive narrative on social media, conquered the mainstream media. Now it's time to get our most delicious memes in front of Americans, whether they like it or not.
Gee, that doesn't sound fascist at all.
No.
And so I guess some of the other founders of this group came from Reddit's The Donald.
Yep.
Of course.
And many other.
I guess there's a weird controversy about the classification of this group as far as being like a social welfare 501c4 nonprofit that are not supposed to get that involved in political campaigns or for one candidate over the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess there's potential legal issues if they go too far.
Right.
Oh, this is going to go places.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the future of American politics. Be afraid. Be very, very afraid.
Yeah. Live it in virtual reality.
Yeah, imagine Ready Player One style world where you go to the Donald Trump planet.
They already had that. It was called Nazi Germany.
So, yeah.
All right.
Nice knowing Oculus, I guess.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange to me to see, like, this kind of stuff come out and directly affect the bottom line of a business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've already got one developer that has said they are no longer doing Oculus.
Yeah.
Who is it?
The developers of Super Hypercube. Kokoromi and Polytron.
Polytron. Oh, Phil Fish's old joint.
All right, so I guess the other major VR places are fixing to get a big stock boost.
Yeah.
You know, Valve, not like they really need it, and Sony is doing okay, so.
Yeah.
HTC's probably happy.
Yeah, they need
Let's
it.
Let's see. Insomniac was asked about this, and they say they condemn all forms of hate speech. Didn't respond to questions about whether they were going to continue to work on Oculus games, which I believe most of their stuff has been funded by Oculus. So it's probably stuff they wouldn't have made otherwise.
Yeah.
But Soundstage VR, a musical instrument sandbox built specifically for room-scale virtual reality.
Hmm.
They are giving all of their profits for the next day to Hillary's campaign.
Hmm. Nice.
Nice. All right. Yeah. All right, so moving on from that, we got some hockey news. So, Pat?
Yep. World Cup of Hockey. Team USA tanked with its rather suspect roster that left off some, I would say, key players by just about anyone's definition. And they heard about it on Twitter after going 2-0. Phil Kessel of the Pittsburgh Penguins, in particular, posted, and I quote, "Just sitting around the house tonight with my dog, felt like I should be doing something important, but couldn't put my finger on it."
Hmm. Yeah, it's that whole, you know, World Cup of Hockey that I didn't get chosen for.
And Bobby Ryan of the Ottawa Senators said, "Kill USA Hockey with kindness and maybe they'll let me play over 35 adult worlds if I'm not a defensive liability by then." And then things got a little bit ugly as Josh Pauls of the USA Sled Hockey team got in on the chirping when he said, "Really glad I was born without legs. The U.S. sled team has a much better track record of success than the U.S. men's stand-up hockey team."
Ouch. Yeah,
so
this was kind of a shit show then this year.
Yeah, they went winless for the tournament. They also lost a meaningless game against the Czech Republic yesterday, so they actually went 0-3 for the tournament. I also think we're at the point now where we can all agree that John Tortorella is locker room cancer. His teams all seem to follow a distinct trajectory. He gets hired on, a team enjoys immediate success and usually creating a star or two in the process, making him look like a genius. Then the team faces some adversity, goes on a bit of a losing streak, and he starts cracking the whip. Before long, the entire locker room has tuned him out, and it just gets worse and worse until he inevitably gets fired. The World Cup is a short-form tournament, so I'm guessing that the USA's initial loss to the North American under-23 team precipitated said screaming out that only got worse and really didn't prepare them at all for the game against Canada, which they, you know, proceeded to lose handily. But this is more than a pattern at this point. That nobody wants to play for the guy who's just cracking the whip.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
And the only thing that any team's ever in it for is just hoping that immediate success will offset any detriments that should emerge 2 or 3 years down the line. And this runs on about a 2 or 3 year cycle, 4 if you're lucky. but I just kind of suspected that something like this was going to happen when he was put at the helm of Team USA. Yeah. And they're going to have to go in a very different direction.
Yeah.
All righty then. So, moving on from there, Adult Swim is streaming all of the Space Ghost episodes, all of them.
All the ones that they could get a hold of, anyway.
All the ones they could get a hold of, anyway. Because, oh, for those of you who don't know, Adult Swim recently got rid of their tape library. So,
oops.
Proved to have been a mistake.
Yeah. But the reason they did it is because the voice actor for both Zorak and Moltar recently passed away. And to honor his legacy, they showed some of his best work.
Yeah.
Who here used to watch that show?
Me.
Yeah, I mean, and I mean that show was on before Adult Swim became a thing.
Yeah.
That show was the that show is actually really kind of the sort of predecessor to Adult Swim, I think.
Yeah. It really set the table for it.
Yeah. And it's, you know, that use of sort of limited animation with more mature humor.
Yeah.
And as well as repurposing old Hanna-Barbera characters that nobody had been using.
Yeah.
Hilariously.
Yeah. You know, they do the same thing with, you know, C-Lab 2020 yep. and Birdman, a bunch of other stuff. Pretty much, you know, it's funny because Space Ghost, if you really think about it, is kind of a, as far as superhero characters go, he's just kind of dumb.
Yeah, and they play up to that.
Yeah. in fact, to be honest, a lot of Hanna-Barbera's action cartoon lineup was kind of stupid.
Yeah, but I mean, that was the era that they were in, you know?
Yeah. Like, compare that to, like, the Herculoids, or, you know, I mentioned Birdman.
Harvey Birdman.
Mm-hmm. Attorney at Law. another great show,
yeah.
I should point out. But, yeah, so I used to love that show back in, like, the mid to late 90s, which was right around the time we finally got satellite television. So, you know, I finally got to watch Nickelodeon regularly instead of, you know, having to go over to my grandma's house to watch it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always knew that that show was kind of different from the other ones just because of the weird kind of, again, the humor was more mature. It had a much lower budget. They used a lot of repeated animation. And honestly, if you really look at it, Space Ghost Coast to Coast was itself, the show, was really reminiscent of something that you would see regularly now on YouTube. But prefiguring it by a good, almost a good decade. But yeah, so.
Yeah, I was more of a Brack Show fan. As far as that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was never really a big fan of the talk show thing.
Yeah. There was a... Space Ghost had another show, too. That would come on in the middle of the day. I forgot what it was called. I think it was called Cartoon Planet.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. I remember there were multiple shows. All I remember was Coast to Coast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Space Ghost and Dino Boy, Space Stars, Cartoon Planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and all that stuff prefigured Adult Swim. So, yeah.
Yeah, 94 is when the show started.
Mm-hmm.
20 years then.
Yeah. Wow, William Street really has been around a long time.
Yeah.
All right, so... moving on from there, as we said earlier, Loveline is back. Or is it?
It sort of is.
You be the judge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've listened to the first couple episodes. I guess there's a third one that's up now that I haven't had a chance to check out. I'm glad it's back.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, okay, we'll go over the positives first.
Okay.
I'm okay with this. The message has always been more important than the messengers. Obviously, yeah. Obviously it was something really special when Adam and Drew were there.
Yeah.
And thankfully, those episodes are all well archived and available. You know, all you really have to do is Google it. But in the absence of them, or really any combination of Drew and whoever they have co-hosting with them at any given time, because it still did well after Adam left.
Mm-hmm.
We can't afford not to have Loveline.
No.
With how
shitty that sex ed is in this country.
And people actually making efforts to keep to make their children stupid.
Yeah.
About this sort of thing. Loveline has always been kind of the big pushback against that.
Yeah.
And giving people a reliable resource, really a fighting chance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm glad it's back, but, you know, it'll probably take some time to determine whether it's really able to do the job that it's there to do.
Yeah.
So it's 3 weeks in. I think, you know, there's going to be some
growing pains.
Yeah, some growing pains, some percolation time before things start to really gel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of the thing that kind of made Loveline was, you know, the chemistry between Adam and Drew just kind of worked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not there yet.
No.
Yeah.
But, you know, the actual content is there.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know.
And we should note, the new hosts are Amber Rose and Chris Donahue.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Donahue is a sex therapist,
yeah.
So not an MD. I think they need to get an MD in there to handle some of the more the questions that are more medical in nature, and they are going to be getting them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of... It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Yeah. Well, they do have call screeners, so they might just not take those kind of questions anymore.
Hopefully they're referring them to
good
sources, though, because
yeah.
that was an important part of classic Loveline.
There's always going to be that one kid who tried to circumcise himself in Pennsylvania who's going to call in. So mm-hmm. That happened, by the way.
Yep.
Okay.
So,
but I'm at least glad that it's back in some form.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if it, you know, stuff like, you know, the thing is, you know, they teach people this shit, you know, over in Europe.
Yeah.
They're fairly thorough about it.
Yep.
And
over here, you have to get that information on the sneak from an overnight radio show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You either have to do that, or you have to get it from porn. And porn is not a good source.
No. And unfortunately, it seems to be the main source.
For far too many people.
And, yeah. Another thing I think they need to do is move to a nightly format, because you're just not going to get that much information into, you know, 45 to 60 minutes once a week.
Right.
But I'm sure, I'm hoping it'll grow into that.
Mm-hmm. All righty then.
But based on the first two episodes, I think they'll be able to handle it in the long run.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Give it some time.
Give it time. Keep in mind, you know, Loveline's been off the air for about 6 months. They got two new people. They need to, they're still trying to work out their overall thing. So
get used to the format and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But it's good. It's entertaining. It's informative.
And Amber Rose is very candid. So
yeah. She brings an honesty to the show that it needs.
Yeah. In the very first episode, she basically talks about a threesome that she had, and she basically admits she hated it. Yeah. And then they go into stuff about, like, you know, when to say no and important stuff, you know.
Yeah.
All right, then. So, to wind up this episode, we are going to talk about, once again, another episode of Gamer Mag Remembrances. And this time, I decided.
Hey, we're here, so we may as well do it.
Yeah. To talk about one of my personal favorite magazines back in the day, which was EGM2.
I loved EGM2.
So, EGM2, to describe what this was, if you wanted to get things like reviews and previews, things like that, you went to Electronic Gaming Monthly. If you wanted a magazine that went past the bullshit and only focused on strategies and codes and tips, you went to EGM2. And that's what EGM2 provided. So this issue that we're looking at, and once again, this is provided once again from the good folks at archive.org, is from issue 48 from June 1998.
So this will be interesting for me because I knew about EGM2, but none of the stores in my area ever carried it.
Yeah.
So this is, strangely enough, my first exposure to an actual issue.
Yeah. So the first thing you're going to notice when you click on this is that this was back in the era when publishers would basically put advertisements over the covers.
It was that little fold-out cover thing that, yeah.
That irritated the hell out of everyone, and yet they kept doing it.
And there's an ad for a game titled Ninja.
Yeah.
I think I played that one.
I actually have this issue.
Yeah. This is in this particular issue, they're going to be talking about a bunch of stuff. Most famously, Banjo-Kazooie.
Yes.
Yeah, first strategy guide, apparently.
Yeah, pretty much. And they're also going to bring up Gran Turismo, Tekken 3, Panzer Dragoon Saga, and Quest 64. And some other stuff.
Quest 64. Kind of wish I had never played that game.
Read the quotes on that ad. They're fucking horrible.
Yeah. But we'll get back to that. Okay, so.
MK4 ad.
Yep. That which calls the warriors summons the vultures.
That was oddly prophetic.
Yeah. This is actually the edition for the console editions. which, I'll be honest, were actually superior to the arcade version.
Yeah, but that's not really saying much.
Well, those of you probably don't know this, but back in the day, when Mortal Kombat was being developed, for some weird reason, Midway decided to put out like this beta version cabinet in the arcades for reasons I still don't understand. Because the game still kind of sucked. All right, let's see. We got an ad for Uprising X.
What's your point? It sucked until 1996.
Good point.
Yeah. All right. Oh, we got an ad for Major League Baseball featuring Ken Griffey Jr.
That was actually a good game.
Yeah. And, of course, it's got more 90s attitude in the ad.
Yeah.
As we've said before, most of these, you know, were published in the 90s, and that's just kind of what the 90s were.
There's a giveaway for Game.com.
Oh, God.
I remember that console solely because the EGM podcast, they would just play Batman moaning from the Batman game.
All right, so let's see. We also got an ad for Command & Conquer Red Alert Retaliation for PlayStation.
I like the ad is just, here's all the features on the back of the box.
Mm-hmm.
34 solo missions, 7 new forbidden weapons.
Well, I'm like
the back of the box.
Save with the memory card.
What?
Why did you put that on your ad?
That's two like separate saying,
CDs. Oh, no, it was Battles in Progress. That was actually something.
On the PS. Yeah.
Play with a mouse.
Yeah, there was a Sony mouse, wasn't there?
Yep. Yeah, there was.
Road Rash 3D.
Road Rash 3D. Wow, I actually loved this one.
I've seen a lot of ads in this magazine.
Yeah. Well, they had to... They
well,
kinda
strategies
had...
probably don't sell well.
Yeah. But yeah, who here played Road Rash 3D back in the day?
I did.
God, that game was so much fun.
All right.
Yeah, and basically, the Road Rash blood drive salutes this the year's top donors.
Yeah. We don't have a Road Rash game. Except for me, except for Road Redemption. That's kind of as close as we're going to get right now.
Need for Speed right. 3 Hot Pursuit.
That was a great game.
Mm-hmm.
That would eventually get remade.
Oh, yeah. All right. Now
twice,
we got... Let's see. What else we got? Well, we got the letters section.
Did these guys do the Psycho Letter of the Month the way regular EGM did?
Glance it through it.
I don't see it.
They have a Letter of the Month, but...
Yeah.
Trash Let's... Talk. We'll put this text right over a aluminum trash can that you can barely read.
Yeah. But let's see, what do we got here in the letters section? Let's see, finding out how to play Meat in Mortal Kombat 4, Beast Wars, Resident Evil 2.
I got their top games of the world.
Oh, here's a game I haven't heard from Fort Ray over here on the right hand. How do you access the cow in Fighter's Destiny? For those who don't know, who here played Fighter's Destiny back in the day?
I did.
Those who don't know, Fighter's Destiny was a very involved and complex fighting game with no story to speak of. It just had a bunch of random characters, and the game just said, all right, here's some people. They're beating the hell out of each other. Get to it.
It's a hell of a name, too.
For some reason, there was a cow.
Yeah, one of the...
For some reason, there was a cow.
So the cow was actually a character that you fought in a particular mode. It was a part of the endurance mode. So basically, this cow could kick your ass. And if you notice, I'm not sure if you can tell with that weird little picture, but his arena was basically in this giant void that was surrounded by a children's farm drawing.
Wow.
Yeah, this was a very, very odd game. Which,
I'm guessing this has nothing to do with Fighter's history.
No, different game.
Different game entirely.
Yeah.
See, this game wasn't a ripoff.
No, it wasn't great.
But it was original, at least.
Yeah.
It was good enough to get a sequel.
Yeah.
Which I also played. And that one also had the cow.
Yeah.
Also had a transvestite. Because late 90s.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else we got? We got thinking about the NFL Blitz version for the Nintendo 64. Mm-hmm. Had the letter art. That's something that pretty much that was another thing back in the day. These magazines would have their letter art.
Yeah, I think Game Informer still does it.
And some of them were actually good.
Yeah. Some of them would go on to have big careers. So let's see. Arrow Gauge. Don't think I ever played that one.
It looks like something I would want to play, though.
All right. And then we got a thing for videogames.com. That is very, very 90s.
Yes.
This was from GameSpot.
Yeah.
Which is or still around.
Yeah, GameSpot definitely still around.
But,
VideoGames.com iteration of it was when I got involved as part of the community team.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. It's Bird. It's Plane. No, it's Superman 64 for the Nintendo 64. Oh, these poor people.
Ooh. They were really trying to sell that game, weren't they?
Oh, they have no idea what's in store for them.
Oh, I like this video game control glove. Just put it on a fetus.
Yeah.
Because... Although the game's designed after the Warner Brothers cartoon, it's very clean looking, reported Video Game Star. Oh, Lord.
This thing they got at the top. They're talking about Earthworm Jim 3D.
Another sugar of a sequel.
Oh, man.
Sega News, Saturn owners can still expect a few titles to be released for their system before it becomes extinct. The House of the Dead, Panzer Dragoon Saga, Shining Force 3, and Burning Rangers.
That sounds like Jeff Gerstmann might be behind that stuff.
Those are all good.
Yeah. By the way, Burning
Shining
Rangers...
Force 3 was only a third of the game.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Burning Rangers is actually one of the few non-Sonic-related titles that Sonic Team created.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was one of their original IPs. And actually, it was really good.
And if you have not yet played Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed, first of all, go play it. Second of all, there is a course in that game dedicated to Burning Rangers.
Yeah. See, this is you know what, Sonic Team, bring this IP back.
Ooh.
This would work as a new game.
Yeah.
Sonic Team did Billy Hatcher, right?
Yeah,
they did.
Billy Hatcher was excellent.
They did Phantasy Star Online, they did
Choo Choo Rocket, Samba de Amigo.
Granted, this is a different Sonic Team we're talking about than the one that exists right now, but
yeah. You know, this is the Nights into Dreams Sonic Team. This is not the Sonic 06 Sonic Team.
Yeah.
Well, neither is the current one.
Yeah.
No.
But the current one seems to actually, you know, want to do a good job now.
Right. Oh, and then we got a nice 90s-centric ad for Death Trap Dungeon. I remember this ad.
I have this game, by the way.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm not going to say anything more than that, because you really shouldn't say any more about Death Trap Dungeon. It's not good.
No. And this ad lies to you. Because not only is it not torture to not play it, there are no busty dominatrixes to be found. You bastards, you lied to us.
Yeah.
Let's see, next page. Oh, Game Shark.
Oh, a nice big section of codes, too.
Yep, and we got some stuff for Quake 64. Oh, Game Shark, you helped me out of many a jam.
Yeah.
It's because of you that I was finally able to beat Final Fantasy VIII the first time. Because I could not get past that frickin'... I'll say no more. Oh, man. Let's see. What else we got?
The final dungeon is kind of vicious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. And we got some codes for Snowboard Kids. Now, there's an IP I haven't heard about in a long time.
Hmm.
I loved the original Snowboard Kids. Hmm. It was a lot of fun.
I'd rather have 1080 back before they go there, though.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I want 1080 back, and it has to have an intro with unintelligible vocals.
Yeah.
What is this wheels you sit on thing?
Oh, that's stuff for performer.com.
Hmm.
That per was a four. Yeah, numerical four. That was you got like game peripherals and stuff.
I like the way this is cut off. It says not cool at the top.
And then. Way cool. Oh, God. Yeah, once again.
The inspiration 90s. For that wireless racing wheel on the Xbox 360.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
I like the picture of this guy using it where he's like rolling on the ground with it.
You know, all those times when you kept, you know, getting too into playing the game and, you know, moving the controller around even though it doesn't do anything? Yeah. Now
You're
it does.
25 years old.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of 1080 snowboarding, look down there in the corner. Quick Start. See, we also got code for Star Wars Shadows of the Empire.
Tetrasphere.
See.
These layouts, though, are really bare bones.
Yeah. Like I said, this is what you came to EGM2 for.
Yeah, this was definitely the lower budget one.
This was this is where you didn't want any shit about any reviews or previews. You wanted codes and strategy.
Yeah.
And that's what this was for. Mm-hmm. Let's see, we got thing for auto destruct. And then we got an ad for the Grand Stream Saga.
I did play that.
The RPG with great anime cutscenes and character models with no faces.
From THQ.
They don't exist anymore.
Except they do.
Yeah, they do.
Now they do. I wonder if Nordic managed to get that one as part of their IP lot.
It was probably just a localization deal.
Yeah. Then we got an ad for X-Men versus Street Fighter for the PlayStation. That game...
Good game, but the PlayStation port wasn't that great.
No, it sucked. The arcade version was amazing, though.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that game... The arcade version of that game was the shit.
I honestly prefer the early Versus games to stuff like Marvel vs. Capcom 2, Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Yeah.
No, the Grand Stream Saga is made by Shade. ActRaiser, Soul Blazer, Illusion of Gaia.
See, now I'm thinking I have to try this game out.
Mm.
Godzilla Generations Maximum Impact?
No.
No. All right. See, then we got an ad for Arrow Fighters Assault for the N64. They even had a booth at E3, apparently.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the fact that they're inviting people to visit their booth at E3 says more about the...
quality of the game.
The audience that these magazines were going to, because if you were just buying this magazine out of stores, you probably weren't going to E3.
Yeah. Well, there was 1 year that E3 was public.
Yeah.
Maybe this was it.
Yeah. Let's see, and then we got unlimited gold trick for Diablo. Tetris.
Deep in gold.
And then we got an ad for Jaleco Games. We got Tetris Plus.
It is now a real estate company, if I remember correctly.
For some reason, yes.
A Tetris Plus, Speed Racer, and Punky Skunk.
Ew.
Wow, that is...
Funky Skunk. Isn't that like every skunk?
I think it was probably a 3D platformer.
Yeah.
Probably.
They...
Pick up your favorite Jaleco title at a retailer near you now.
Please, God, we're begging you.
We've got
sure Tetris.
Tetris
Plus was the one that sold most.
Yeah,
kind of sad to see that was what became of the house that Bases Loaded built.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see. Then we got a thing for Need for Speed 3. Then we got an ad for Tomb Raider 1 and 2.
See all that Lara has to offer.
And then when you're through with that, go on the internet and see more.
Much, much more.
More than you ever dreamed of and probably in your nightmares. It's amazing to think that was considered the pinnacle of video game sex appeal back in the late 90s.
Yeah.
It was.
That's true.
That was, not Japanese.
Yeah.
In Origin.
Or Night Trap.
Yeah. Let's see. Then we got more codes, an advertisement for Prima's Tekken 3 strategy guide.
Great. I had that guide.
I think I had it too. Tekken 3 for the PlayStation. That was a
breakthrough game for Tekken.
Yeah.
That game
that was
had
also
like
one of those PlayStation games that you just kind of ended up having.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a copy of that.
Yeah.
That game had like a million modes on it.
Yep.
Including a side-scroller beat-em-up.
Yep.
A brawler.
Where Tekken Ball comes from.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. And we got codes for Pitfall 3D. Midway Arcade Greatest Hits.
The Atari Collection.
That was actually...
The Atari Collection.
That one wasn't bad.
Road Blasters, Marvel Madness, Paperboy, Gauntlet, Crystal Castle.
Oh, God, is that what that's Millipede. Supposed to be?
That's actually good.
I thought that was a gremlin with a hat.
That's Paperboy.
Yeah, it's just Paperboy.
Let's see. Kobe
that's
Bryant.
That's why he kept getting run over. It was like, kill it, kill it.
Yeah. Let's see. We got one of those ads for Kobe Bryant and NBA courtside.
Yeah, that's Kobe Bryant nearly 20 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Yep. And let's see.
I don't think anybody even remembers this particular game.
Yeah, and then Rascal, another Death Trap Dungeon.
Jeez.
Here's our amazing CD.
$10 off.
At Sears.
At Sears.
Funtronics.
Those coupons would never happen today.
No.
Nope.
You gotta go to the Sears Funtronics.
Putting a $10 coupon for any game would be... Publishers would feel like they were giving it away.
Yeah. Yeah,
you could tell how out of touch Sears was because it's Sears Funtronics Department.
Again, though, you have to remember this was the late 90s, so... Let's see... reboot.
Is that
game.
Something like Babbage's?
Yeah, no, it was just it was just their electronics department, but that's what they called it.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's fun. You're having fun.
You're bored in the rest of the building, but here's where you get fun.
This is the fun room. See, then we got codes for reboot game.
Oh, hey, it's the Saga and Seiken Densetsu reissues.
A.K.A. the Final Fantasy games for Game Boy. In one game, you get to fight God. And God is a little Amish man on the screen.
Adventure, Legend.
And then you get
legend.
To kill God.
Basically, it's the original Seiken Densetsu and the original Saga trilogy.
Yeah.
Featuring Sunsoft.
Yep. See, then we got codes for AAA99. Then we got an ad for the Speed Racer game.
The only game that totally satisfies your need for speed. I wonder what game they're referencing.
Includes the Alpha Team Techno Mix and the cartoon's original opening.
Please buy us.
We're begging you.
I wonder if that game was actually any good.
No, it wasn't. It was shit. I know because I played it.
Hmm.
Because I was really into Speed Racer back then. Because that was back when they regularly played reruns on Cartoon Network. It was that same. It was that same block that also had a G-Force.
Yeah,
it was made by a developer called Graphic Research
and sold by Jaleco. Let's see, Duke Nukem 3D. We got a hidden game.
It was for the Sega Saturn. That was actually a really good version of it.
Yeah, this was, what was it? Death Tank. That was the name of the game.
Yeah, the game rankings for Speed Racer is 45.5%.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so like I said, it sucked. Let's see. The feel of real. Ever wonder what it feels like to take an S-turn at 180 miles per hour? Get a grip, because this summer you'll be able to strap yourself in to Video System's new racing sim for the N64 and get a dose. Simply awesome. It's another thing for them offering to come visit their booth at E3. Tricks for oh god, yep, there it is, that Quest 64 ad. Walk softly and carry
look at
a
those
big
eyes.
Don't look at them too long, because you know what they say about staring into the abyss. The abyss
Call
stares
pupils.
Out. Yeah,
he's just high as hell. He's on his drugs.
Yeah,
that's why.
That's the only reason you would. That's the only reason you would play this thing, because this game sucked.
Yeah.
It's like, man, what's this stick doing?
All right, just okay, Phil. Some of people who were too young to remember Quest 64. This was one of the first games that actually came out on the Nintendo 64.
It was supposed to be one of the first games that came out on 64, but it got delayed so many times it came out.
And man, the quality sure shows, doesn't it?
I like the quotes.
Yeah,
we'll set the standard. We'll set the standard for 3D epics. Nintendo Power. will provide diehard RPG players and newcomers to the genre with many hours of solid gameplay. Ooh, I don't know who wrote that one. That's hard to read. Incredibly sweet graphics. EGM.
Wow. Somebody is on the take there.
Yeah. but yeah, this game was really, really awful. It was, the idea was they wanted to make it like a beginner's RPG. They did not succeed.
Yeah, I remember this is the game where it's like, well, we lost Final Fantasy, we lost Dragon Warrior, we're going to get a real RPG now.
Yeah. All right, so let's see. We got an ad.
Reboot game.
Yeah, for the reboot game. Then we got the strategy guide for Panzer Dragoon Saga. All right, so
for the people that actually were able to find a copy of that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It says here over on the side, Saturn owners will not be disappointed by this release, although the amount of games being released for the Saturn
disappointed by its distribution.
Yeah. Although the games being released for the Saturn has been slowed to a trickle, this game will prove that quality titles are still available on this slowly fading platform.
At least if they tell you.
Yeah.
Available. Air quotes.
Favorite Make quote, it... this ship is as big as... That's the quote.
Yeah. But, so, Panzer Dragoon, that whole series is one of those cult game series that sadly never got the respect it deserved.
Yeah.
It was...
This particular game was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was... I think one of the best games in the series.
Yeah, so I played the original Panzer Dragoon. I never got to play this one.
This was an RPG.
Yeah, this was an RPG.
Yeah, it's a shame there's no remaster of any of those games.
Yeah.
For those who don't... That is one thing that the new Sega could do to really get some positive press.
Yeah, if you want reboot the... Panzer Dragoon.
No, just re-release them.
Or re-release them, yeah. Like, well, HD re-release them and then reboot. Yeah. So the original Panzer Dragoon was a rail shooter.
Yeah, the first two were.
Yep.
Yeah, it was really good rail shooters.
Yep.
We should add, that looked amazing for the time.
Yeah.
It was actually, the art direction was actually done by none other than famous French artist Mobius. Who, if you are ever a reader of Heavy Metal Magazine or basically any underground comic in the 80s, you invariably saw his work.
Yeah.
This is one of those franchises that sadly has never gotten the respect it deserved because it just so happened to come out on a badly supported platform.
Yeah. It did get a game on the original Xbox.
Wow, which is about the same as the Saturn.
Yeah.
As in, not many copies and nobody really played it.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah, we got this big strategy guide for it. I say big, it's like 4 pages.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, back in magazine days, that was prime real estate.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is an RPG we're talking about.
Yeah.
Let's see. Then we've got an ad for Midway. And let's see what we got. We got Mortal Kombat Trilogy.
It's got a safety warning for us.
Yeah. Initial exposure to this offer could result in a brief period of shock followed by hours of endless entertainment. Yeah. So let's see. We got Mortal Kombat
Trilogy. Well, considering NBA Hang Time is on the list, that's valid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Doom 64 is on there, too.
Yeah, Doom 64. For those who don't know, Mortal Kombat Trilogy, originally, at first, they called it Mortal Kombat Anthology. It was basically all the characters in Mortal Kombat that were playable up to that point.
Yeah.
In one game.
Guess how broken that was.
Yeah, they basically, the problem was because of all those characters they had, they basically had to cut out some frames of animation.
Hmm. Is this the version that has the broken Shang Tsung?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Where you had to pick the morph that you could do.
Yeah. All right, and then let's see. Oh, we got War Gods. True 3D fighting environment. Who here remembers War Gods?
I do.
Unfortunately.
I rented that thing like 2 or 3 times from Blockbuster. I don't know what was wrong with me.
Yeah.
War Gods was basically what was originally their prototype for Mortal Kombat 4.
Yep.
That they just decided to make it into an original game. Unfortunately, it has neither the history or the,
polish
or quality, for that matter, of a Mortal Kombat game. This game, it's really hard to justify playing this thing because it was so mediocre.
Yeah. What's kind of sad, though, is I like the premise.
Yeah.
But the execution, not so much.
No.
And then there was the audio.
Yeah. The less said of that, the better.
Mm-hmm. On the other side of the equation, though, we've got Mace the Dark Age, which was actually really awesome.
Yes.
Mace the Dark Age.
Speaking of promising.
Yeah, it was a weapon-based fighter with a bunch of characters. And
it was a weapon-based fighter when there wasn't a whole lot of that going on.
Yeah, it was also really bloody. It had these dynamic, three-dimensional battle spaces that you fought in. It had a bunch of very interesting, fantasy-based characters. I mean, you had your basics, like your knight and your big axe guy. You also had a dwarf in a giant steam mech.
Yeah. Because that was awesome.
Yeah, and you had a zombie knight, you had a chicken, you had a, no, I'm not kidding, there was a chicken that you got to play.
Mm-hmm.
There was the gargoyle, and then, of course, there was the final boss who was, four times taller than you were and would kick your ass very quickly.
Yeah. 'Cause that's how Midway rolled back then.
Yep.
No. When we talk about it being good, we're not talking about being Street Fighter good or Virtua Fighter good, but it was definitely one of those games where somebody who was at Midway should have pulled the studio aside and said, hey, let's see more of this. Let's see where we can go with this.
Yeah. This is like Fighters Mega Mix good.
Yeah.
Sort of.
It's... Yes. In whatever ways Fighters Mega Mix was good, we can attribute that
to this. Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't there a planned sequel?
There was. It never came out, but
PlayStation was also planned.
Yep. See, one of the things I've realized as we've gone back over doing this sort of mini series is that there's a lot of really good IPs that kind of fell by the wayside.
Yeah.
I
would love to see the current NetherRealm go back to Mace.
Yes.
Yeah. Of course, they'll have to finish with Injustice 2 first, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're pretty much done.
It would be a good stopgap between Injustice 2 and Mortal Kombat 11.
Yeah.
And since it was developed by Atari,
which was Midway at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, back in, NetherRealm today could do things with the Mace, with that IP that they couldn't get away with back then.
Yeah.
All right. So what do we got? We got a strategy guide for the House of the Dead.
Yeah, I guess that is because...
Huh?
Do you really need a strategy guide for this?
That's what I was about to say.
Shoot the eggs.
Well, you would think that, but
probably like the secret level.
Yeah, but don't you remember? Didn't the original House of the Dead have branching paths?
Yeah.
And it also had some bosses that were hard as balls too. So,
true.
Let's see. What do we got? This. Oh, here's an IP from Square. Einhander. That is an IP I want to see Square get back to.
Who do you get to develop it, though?
Treasure.
So, to describe, to those of you who don't know what Einhander is, Einhander was a shoot 'em up. It was a shmup with glorious-looking 3D graphics, an awesome sort of German electronic soundtrack.
As I recall, it was also hard as balls.
Oh, yeah.
And what was cool is you could dual wield weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah, you basically, you could get two weapons and you could switch between the two on the fly. So, like, you could get, like, a grenade launcher and a Vulcan and just switch between the two regularly. And
this was published by Sony here in North America.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
This was, and we have to remember, this was...
There was a long run there where Squaresoft was not doing their own publishing.
Yeah.
It's either EA or Sony.
Yeah. And we have to remember, once again, point out, this is Squaresoft we're talking about, not Square Enix.
Yeah.
This was back in the day when, as I've said a million times before, I'm going to say it again, if you went to the PlayStation section of your game store and found a game with a snowy white background...
That cover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were
this
pretty much in for a good time.
A non-RPG that had that cover.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, the composer was Kenichiro Fukui.
Yep. Let's see. They also... This was... of course, this is also where Airgeist came into the picture.
Yeah. Yeah. I could do without that one.
But we also had Brave Fencer Musashi.
Yeah.
Yet another IP I hope Square gets back to, because Brave Fencer Musashi, man, that game was a lot of fun.
You don't think Samurai Legend Musashi left a bad taste in people's mouths?
I never played that one.
I don't think people remember.
And I don't think anyone else did either. Let's see. That got an ad for The Unholy War from Crystal Dynamics.
That'd be a very different game today.
Let's see. Let's see what we got next. We got... Oh, yes, yeah, the continuing thing for Einhander. Let's see. Let's see. We got one of those order over the phone type deals that people
used to do. Should we talk about this?
The order over the phone thing?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Because,
see, I never did it, but...
I never actually did it, but I had friends who did. And back in the day, before the internet really rose to prominence, this was how you had to be an import gamer.
Yeah, see, but we have to remember, this is, like we said, this is the late 90s. The internet was still in the everyone and their mother has a website stage, so...
Yeah, it was the GeoCities era, maybe just pre-GeoCities.
Back when some people still believed that the internet was going to be a fad.
Yeah.
On the list for N64 is Earthbound, September 98th, $76.
Don't think that actually ever happened.
No.
Wonder how many orders they got for that one.
Let's see. But yeah, this was basically how you got import games back in the day.
Yeah. And some of them were really good, to be fair.
Super Mario Kart R. Virtual Chess 64, $62.
Ugh. But, so you were saying some of them were really good, but
they gave rise to the first wave of online-based importers.
Uh-oh.
And I am about to name the dreaded buy right. And that...
as long as you don't say it two more times, it won't appear.
Yeah,
it's okay.
That's true. And that was kind of the problem, because there wasn't really any kind of standard practice in place. It was just a bunch of independent middlemen setting up shop and taking out ads in magazines and, of course, eventually getting their websites in place. And even in here, you have a URL being hosted by another domain entirely, but that was kind of how they rolled back then.
Yeah, this is from Chips and Bits Inc., which was in Vermont.
Yeah.
You can get some Magic the Gathering cards for $2.
Fifth edition course. Okay, that... Yep. I feel cold.
I like a lot of the Saturn games are $20 on this list. Sorry when things are going down.
Yeah,
well, Saturn stuff in Japan didn't really fizzle out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sold on these guys being importers, though.
I think some of these are imports, but not all of them are. All right. So moving on, we got a strategy guide for something called Theme Hospital.
Part of the theme park series.
Yeah. For PlayStation. Yeah.
Yep. Bullfrog.
And then we got strategy for, I remember this game, Forsaken.
Never played it.
It was sort of a spiritual successor to Descent.
That's what I always heard. From a claim. That's what always, like, it was one of those games where whenever I had money and I was going to the local game stores, it was always on my list of possibilities to check out, but I always ended up buying something else.
Yeah. And you can tell that this is definitely the 90s, because look at this character arc. Yeah.
Women with, like, 20 abs and big boobs.
And dear God, where are their spines?
Where are their
made
insides?
Out of elastic.
Yeah. Apparently, I'm, like, one of the only people that actually bought this game, because it didn't sell very well.
I rented it. It was okay. So, yeah.
There's a big edge. It says videogames.com.
That's
all you need to know.
Yep. Once again, like we said, late 90s internet.
Just a big edge is the URL.
To be fair, I followed one of those links and the rest is history. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Ziff Davis, a SoftBank company.
SoftBank.
Good old Ziff Davis.
Yeah. Oh, we got a strategy for Mega Man Legends.
Also featured on this week's PlayStation Flash sale.
Yeah. Man, I loved this game back in the day. I rented this game like 6 or 7 times from Blockbuster.
Well, I could have just bought it for that price.
No, I didn't really have the money at that point.
Because you kept renting it.
So, yeah, this was the first 3D Mega Man game. Took place in a completely in a different Mega Man universe.
And didn't really play anything at all like a Mega Man game, but
it was a lot of fun. Yeah. But the control, you know, by modern standards, the controls were ass.
Yes.
Because this was back before
the DualShock existed.
Yeah.
And you can't really have ass controls in anything called Mega Man.
No.
It just doesn't.
Fortunately, the rest of the game made up for it, because this game was a lot of fun back in the day.
Except for the voice acting.
Yeah, except for the voice acting.
Well, this,
you play Kick the Can.
Yeah, into the shop front. Get a boatload of cash and also lose bits of your reputation.
Yeah.
Say. Yeah. Funny enough, some of these, although this game is, you know, technically not, this game did kind of have some Dark Horse characters. You know, Tron Bon became a
thing
herself. And of course, this is where the famous little Lego head robot guys come from.
Kobun.
Yeah.
And what's the little monkey dude?
Damn, I'm with. Yeah, I remember him. I'm trying to remember, because he played this weird sort of... The game gets really weird towards the end. Yeah, it just... It gets to a point where it just kind of stops making sense. The imagery was pretty.
Yeah.
You know? Let's see, so...
Tekken 3 strategies.
Oh, yeah. Tekken 3, back when Yoshimitsu had a lightsaber, even though they didn't call it that, and was apparently a cyborg alien.
Inspired by ID4.
Leo was always one of those.
Yeah.
And Mokujin.
See, got
Dr. B.
Yep, Dr. B. We also got, there's the beach ball abode.
Gone.
Oh, yeah, Gon. Damn, I forgot about him. Okay, do you guys know who Gon was?
Yep.
Gon was actually the character in this really amazing manga that used to be published back in the 90s. If you could ever find a copy of it, do, because it's amazing. Like, the artwork is unreal.
I wonder if this was the first mainstream crossover.
Probably was. I mean, this particular character was selling like crazy in Japan at the time. The comic was running in Weekly Comic Morning. So it was doing, you know, it was really big at the time. Let's see. What else we got? We got Ogre and True Ogre.
Yeah, Gon comes from the manga Gon.
Yep. Told you. And Julia Chang, the Chinese American Indian.
Yeah.
And the wooden test dummy that became sentient.
Somehow.
And his alternate counterpart, which was a female.
Hmm.
You could tell because somebody took a saw blade and cut curves into it.
And you got Kuma.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The bear.
Kuma and Panda.
Yeah.
Who he's always trying to get a piece of that ass.
Hmm.
Let's see.
It's your Death Trap Dungeon.
Yep, it's the strategy guide for Death Trap Dungeon.
Moving on.
And creepy CG.
Yeah. They really, you were right, Phil. They really were trying to sell this thing. Let's see. Limited edition video game. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah,
Electronic
we got
Gaming Monthly's Player's Guide to Video Games for the Nintendo 64. Nice title.
All six of them. let's see.
Sort of closing in on the back of the book here.
Biofreaks.
Oh,
okay, there's a game I haven't heard about in a long time.
Hmm.
For those of you who don't know Biofreaks was a... It's kind of hard. It was ostensibly a fighting game.
Hmm.
Midway.
Yeah, by Midway. And
they did
it
some
was
weird shit back then.
Yeah.
They were trying to find something that worked.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
None of it did.
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, and basically what this was is it was like a cyberpunk type, sort of biopunk kind of fighting game. All these weird ass characters. Zipperhead, who ostensibly became the mascot of the series, of the quote unquote series, even though it was just
one game.
Cyclone.
Because he was on the box.
Minotech. Minotaur, the robot Minotaur.
Yeah. And then, of course, you got the two female characters in the game who are barely wearing anything at all.
Sabotage.
There's Sabotage with her under boobs and Delta with her tits just about to fall out of her.
Clearly not influenced by Mortal Kombat.
No.
No.
Not at all.
And then we got a strategy guide for Gran Turismo.
You turn left and you turn right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Then you break.
Yep.
Then you can run into this guy and knock him off the course.
Because there's no damage.
Yeah, just hit the wall at the right angle.
There's no penalties yet.
Yeah.
Oh. This was Gran Turismo, the first from the series from Polyphony Digital.
Still going strong.
Yeah, so this, I'm guessing when Gran Turismo first came out, it did really well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that and the sequel were two of the best-selling PlayStation games.
Yeah.
Of all. Yeah. And, you know, as far as graphics-wise, these were pretty cutting-edge back then.
Yep.
Because Polyphony Digital really wanted to make sure that these, you know, these cars that they licensed from these manufacturers looked as good as possible, which is also the reason why they never added in any, you know, damage.
Yeah, initially, but
they did eventually, but it took them a while to
figure it out.
Get a hang of it.
Still can't really do it.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is accurate, but Gran Turismo sold 10.85 million, top PS1 game, Final Fantasy 7, 9.72.
Yeah.
Gran Turismo 2, 9.37.
Seems about right.
Yeah, I believe it. See, so what do we got? Oh, we got a strategy guide for Quest 64.
Moving on.
Look at that map art.
Oh,
That's some.
All you gotta do is figure out how to turn off your 64.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh Lord.
Return to store. Winner.
Yeah. Store game complete. All right. Oh, and then we got a strategy guide for Banjo-Kazooie.
Game you actually won.
Yeah.
Game that's actually really good. This was back when, you know, Rare was still the Rare we remember, doing all these Collecticon 3D platformers.
Yeah.
And this game was so much fun.
Yeah.
This was the Collectathon, though.
Yep.
Oh, well, no, that would be Donkey Kong 64.
Oh, well, yeah.
Donkey Kong 64.
Banjo-Kazooie is, like, worth remembering.
Yeah.
But, like, back in my head.
Yeah, this was one of those games I just spent hours with it. Yeah. It was just, there was something about that getting lost in that world.
Yeah.
Just so much fun. And you just had one of the greatest villains of all time because she basically talked shit to you the whole game. All right. And then we're at the game over section with some Yoshi's Story stuff. Yoshi's Story, that game was a letdown.
We're going to take all the cool parts of Yoshi's Island and make a bad game out of it.
Yeah.
I think that Yoshi's Story is the kind of game that I reserve the word soft for.
Yeah.
It goes in the same box as Knuckles Chaotix.
Yeah. I mean, ostensibly, it's not badly made. It's just really mediocre. I mean, and the thing was, is they were going up against, you know, the first Yoshi's game. And, you know, I mean, admittedly, that game is really hard to, you know, measure up to because it was so amazing. But,
yeah. See, it's weird, though, because Yoshi's Story is a game that's either going to be really, really hard or really, really easy, mainly because of the way you play it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I remember when I was a kid, I forgot how old I was, but before I played it, like, I was really hyped about it, but that's what the advertising did.
Yeah.
But before I played it, I played a game called Chameleon Twist.
Mm-hmm.
And for its time, it's really mediocre, but for its time, that was a pretty solid 3D platformer. And that's the kind of game I was expecting with the Yoshi's Story.
Nope.
When I played it, I was like, oh, God, what is this?
No.
I beat it in like, what, an hour?
Yeah.
I guess this game is the beginning of Yoshi's voice.
Mm.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. And then we got the next month section where they're giving us stuff for EGM2, Electronics Gaming Month, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and then we got the, you know, getting the stuff. So, Game Express.
Yeah.
Where you could get a bunch of import stuff. You can get figures, you know, Evangelion, Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball. Mm. This was back when you basically had to, you know, either call or send a letter or something.
Yep. Yeah. Usually order you these. Call and give your credit card number and you hope that whatever you ordered would show up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They wouldn't give you tracking numbers or anything. And to be completely fair, some of these resellers were still actually quite good.
Yeah.
It just that they were mixed in the shuffle with some that weren't quite so good.
Yeah.
Mm. And let's see, what do we got here? We got Breath of Fire 3, Resident Evil 2, Tekken 3, and Gex Enter the Gecko.
One of these games is not like
the other. yeah.
Look at these totally legit accessories at the bottom.
Yeah. Memory and N64.
1 megabit memory card.
And a Trumbull pack.
A Trumbull pack.
All right, and then we got Japan Video Games, your number one source of American and Japanese video games.
Yeah.
So this is another place you got imports.
Yeah.
And once again, they had a shit ton of Dragon Ball Z stuff. And then we got an ad for the Game Shark. Once again, game that's something that helped me out a lot when I was younger.
Yep.
And then we got an ad for Breath of Fire 3, and that's it. Yep. We're at the end.
Well, you got your money's worth.
Oh, yeah. So, like I said, EGM2 was one of those magazines that you got to when you wanted to only do strategy and codes. And that was basically it.
And apparently, you know, when it was available to you.
Yeah. I think that'll wrap it up for this week. I would like to remind all our listeners that if you would like to write into the show, ask us questions, or criticize us, or just have something you want us to read on the air or whatever, you can write into our email address, which is letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's L-E-T-S, Let's Weekenders, W-E-E-K-E-N-D-E-R-S, at Gmail, G-M-A-I-L.com. Not C-O-M. So if you want to write us in, let us know, something like that. You want us to read something. Maybe you disagree with us. Maybe you like Donald Trump. Write in and tell us.
Fuck you, GM2.
Yeah. And with that, I'm going to sign off. So for the rest of the Let's Weekenders, I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, saying good night. Get some sleep out there.